All right, as we continue on our class in the history and geography of the Bible story, we are technically, according to our book, on lesson 40. And we'll look at some of the things concerned with that. And if I run out of material on what I've got, we'll head into the questions on lesson 40, which we've been threatening to discuss for the last several weeks. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. Got a number of things that I wanted to look at relating to the stories we've been looking at in the early chapters of the book of Luke. And I think hopefully you'll find them interesting, the things that I've needed to study out and check them out. In case you're wondering why Mickey's not here, Galen and Lauren asked him to preach over at Santa Paula today, so that's what he's doing. And, of course, half the congregation is there for the wedding anyway, so everybody will be back probably tomorrow evening. Anyway, so he's over there, and I'm over here. So we are, as we have been discussing for quite a while now, looking at this area of the world that we sometimes refer to as the Bible lands and such alike as that. We've kind of started off very focused on the small area of Israel, and then we've expanded out as we've seen things grow as far as kingdoms and things such. And we had, of course, we had the Assyrians that took away the northern kingdom of Israel, and the Assyrian kingdom covered all the way over here off the map. I guess I could scroll it over a little bit. And then, of course, the Assyrian kingdom was taken over by which kingdom? The Babylonian kingdom, empire, whatever we want to call it. Those empires, of course, were more in this region of the world. Never really did get over here to India, though they did touch it. But apparently, the Indians were a much more formidable foe than I had thought. You never really hear much about the Indians, except, well, they were occupied by the British and all that sort of stuff. But in this instance, for example, when we look at later kingdoms, we realize that they went over and tried to make incursions into the mainland of India and were held off by their rulers over there. I think there was a emperor or king or something over here called Chandragupta that held off Alexander the Great's attempted invasion of the land of India. But we realized, of course, then that Assyria had all of this area, including some of Egypt at times, and then Babylon took over from that, and then who took over from them? The Medo-Persian Empire. Theirs actually turned out to be the empire with the greatest extent of those three, and so it was there for they're covering a large area. And then, of course, the Medo-Persian Empire was taken over by what? Okay, so they were more like Greek kingdoms, we might say. There wasn't really a Greek empire. It's just a continuous succession of things in which the Hellenists started to expand their kingdom. The first one we really hear about that did a lot of expansion, other than Alexander the Great, was who? His daddy, Philip of Macedon. Okay, so we're not in Greece now. he, of course, started out up here in, where are we? Where did we go? There we go. In this area of all places, Macedonia. Thus his name, Philip of Macedon. And he kind of tried to, and did a fairly good job, I guess, of unifying the Greek city-states. And then after him, his son, Alexander, who we now call Alexander the Great, he started expanding his borders, and he then made a kingdom or an empire that was bigger, essentially, than any that had been known before. And he tried to get over here, though, he's the one that was held off over here in India, He tried to get into this area and was held off by I believe his name was Chandragupta, was their general at that time. So, as the Greek empires then under Alexander, after Alexander died, they divided up into how many different kingdoms or empires or dynasties? Four, remember? We had one that was here in Macedonia, and I don't remember the names of these things. I only remember the names of two of them. There was the one that was here in Macedonia, and it was a small area right here. And then there was another empire, a kingdom that was in this area. They both started with A. I can't remember what they are now. Anyway. And then down here in Egypt was, we'll remember that one. What dynasty was down in Egypt? The Ptolemies. Okay, so the Ptolemaic dynasty was down here, and then in the Canaan area, the Palestine area, and then off really a fairly large area here, we had another kingdom called what? Say it again. The Seleucids, right. Otherwise called from time to time the Syrian Empire, right? But I find the name Syrian to be too confusing to compare with the Assyrian Empire that was over here, that it's much easier to call it by the name of the families than by what history normally calls it, which is the Seleucid Empire. So the Seleucid Empire dynasty actually reigned fairly large in this area. And then who was the one that, who was the ruler of the Seleucid Empire that became the hated one in the area of Palestine? No, not Antipater. That was later on. There was a king that came in. What? Antiochus. Antiochus the Fourth, otherwise known by himself as Antiochus Epiphanes, which means exalted one or something like that. And there was a play on the Greek word Epiphanes that they used there. They used the word Epimanes, which means mad or insane. So the people that loved him down in here called him Antiochus Epimanes instead of Antiochus Epiphanes. Epiphany. And that's where we get our word, or epiphany, whatever that means. But it's an English word.
Aha moment.
A who?
Aha moment.
An aha moment. Oh, okay, that's right, yeah. What happened then is that these kingdoms sort of started falling apart, but what then started happening regarding these four Hellenistic kingdoms? Some of these guys over here decided that they needed to take a little bit of land. And so the Italians, otherwise known as the Romans, they started branching out from Italy. And I believe they came down here to Carthage first. I'm not positive. And then they started branching out into Spain and Gaul and such like as that. And then they decided that the best thing for them to do was to start taking their navy, which was a pretty good navy, and they just started going around the Mediterranean claiming lands. It was sort of a decree by their Senate that they would take at least 50 miles inland from around the Mediterranean. And I think if we, once again, if we look in our lesson book at this map on page 162, and we look at that, it's probably a little more defined in your book than it is here, but you can see then that they did go around the Mediterranean, started taking territory. And then it turned out then after a while to be sort of a two-pronged attack. And Julius Caesar and others before him started going off in this direction and down here, and then Pompey started going off in this direction. They started expanding their borders even more away from the Mediterranean. David?
I don't know whether I'm forwards or backwards right now, but where did what's his name from Carthage come in?
Who?
Oh, Hannibal. Now, Carthage is here, so I don't think that he came in with elephants from here. But Hannibal, wasn't he from the north? That's right. Hannibal crossed the Alps with his elephants, right? I always thought for some reason that Hannibal came from over in the, you know, in the Asian area. But he must have come. He didn't come from Africa, no. But the given that he had elephants, one would think that he either had to come, as you say, from Africa or from the Indian area. Because those...
I know the elephants. You can't train the African elephants.
Oh, you can't?
Oh,
okay. So African elephants, you can only shoot them. That's all you can do. Huh? All right. I don't know anything about Hannibal. A lot of the people whom I thought that, you know, they'd come in from the east or something, it turned out they all came in here from Germany and France and places like that. But they weren't called Germany and France back then, but Gaul and Spain. But it could be indeed that Hannibal came from. We can all get on our smartphones and look up Hannibal and see what that is. We'll look at that and get an answer to you one of these days. All right.
Richard, what about the northern area of the Black Sea?
This one here?
Pompeii, is that the area that he...
I don't think Pompeii went up there. Pompeii spent more time down here in this area. Right. And also then, remember, he fled to Egypt in like 44 or something like that, B.C., they decided they didn't like him, so they killed him. And then Julius Caesar came down here, and Cleopatra the what?
Seventh.
Cleopatra the Seventh was put sort of in charge, but she and Julius Caesar, and then later she and Mark Antony were sort of in charge of his here. But they were... they were already tied in with Rome, and so they were subservient to Rome. So really, Mark Antony and Cleopatra the Seventh were nominally the last Ptolemaic rulers of the land of Egypt. And so after that, it became under Roman leadership. I think there were a couple of kings after Cleopatra and Antony, but they were still nominally under Roman rule, and then after a while it just became a Roman territory. And then Antiochus the Fourth, and then some of his descendants, they just started getting picked on by other people. Here you see the Parthians right here, the Medes, and all that sort of stuff. These people started shooting at the eastern part of his kingdom and started putting pressure there and knocking that down. And then they always had problems between Egypt and the Palestine area, and so kind of knocked those things down. And the Romans felt that, well, you know, it's a good time for us to take over. So essentially they took over the world and did that overnight. And so the Romans expanded into here, and then by the time we pick up after the, how many years of biblical silence? 400 years of biblical silence. We see that as we look at the area of Palestine, that it's now essentially a Roman province. And so now in this instance, we are more focused directly on Israel and Palestine. So now we've come in, and now as we get into the beginning pages of the New Testament, we are now focusing not on the big picture as we saw before, but actually now just on the area of Israel. It's now all a Roman province by the time that we see it, starting off in the Gospels, and we've looked fairly at length at the book of Luke and the things that go on there. Why is it that Mickey said that we chose the book of Luke?
Because it's the most chronologically accurate.
All right, it's more chronological, and it goes farther back.
Farther back, it covers the biggest, not only chronology, but the biggest section of information.
the big, yeah, right. The biggest amount of information that, that we've got is in the book of Luke. So that kind of refreshes us, I think, on something we've done. Fortunately, I didn't go back all the way to Genesis chapter 12. Yeah, I think there were a few gasps last time when Mickey said, well, let's turn to Genesis chapter 12. So in this instance, I just want us to turn to Leviticus. So what I've looked at here, and as I look in the Bible and look at the book of Luke, which I don't even have up for some reason, yeah, there was the introduction by Luke there to Theophilus, and we look now here. It says, "There was in the days of Herod, king of Judea." Now, whose son is Herod? He's in our book. So, if you look at...
This is the Herod that was dying of cancer, right?
Herod? Who said anything about Herod?
Herod.
All right. So, right wherever I have my cursor. Now I lost it. Oh, there it is. All right. So, you remember, we had talked about Antipater. Antipater, of course, was a person that was sort of helping to try and throw off the Romans, and so he did that for a while, but then it turns out that he decided that things were better with the Romans in there, and so you'll see here that Antipater played a prominent role in the Syrian army. So he was given Roman citizenship, personal immunity from taxes. So as the Romans were coming down from Syria and taking over the area of Palestine, Antipater apparently helped. And Antipater was the father of Herod the Great. Herod the Great was the king that was there when Jesus was born. So who was the person that was in charge when Jesus was crucified? It was, of all things, Herod the Second. So it wasn't the same guy. This Herod, as a matter of fact, died very soon after Jesus' death. It may be in here somewhere. I forgot whether it is or not. Anyway, but in our lesson book, we see one day we're talking about an old Jewish priest. Of course, we have no idea exactly how old he was, but we do realize that it indicates that they were, at least as far as they knew, they were beyond the days of having children, that they didn't have any children. This man is Zacharias, and it says he's a priest. And he had a wife, and her name was Elizabeth, and she was also of the Levitical tribe. So she was of the daughters of Aaron. Now, when I looked at this, I saw that it says there was a certain priest named Zacharias of the course of Abijah. First thing I said to myself is, what's the course of Abijah? I have no idea. And so I started looking at that, and that's what I wanted to talk about this morning. It's interesting to note that both Zacharias and his wife were of the same tribe. That was not necessarily required, but of the priests, it was, I think, preferred. Later on, when we look down and we meet Mary later on, we see that Mary, the mother of Jesus, was a relative of Elizabeth, which means that Mary could be from a Levite strain, or she could just be related on the paternal side, or who knows. There's no indication in the book just what tribe Mary was a part of. But we do know that her husband-to-be, Joseph, was a member of what tribe? Judah, which was prophesied to be what the ruling tribe, as it were. In other words, the tribe out of which would come the Messiah. So what I wanted to look at and study a little bit, though, is that when we look at... See if I've got it here. Is this the one I want? Yeah. I'll increase the size of this thing. What we've got here is is the courses of the priests. And we'll get into where those came from at a time here. But you'll notice that there's actually down here, there's 12 different courses of priests. And these are nominally the month in which they would serve. And then in each month, there were two different families that would serve in that month. And what we want to do is now is when we want to go back to, I'm sorry, it was the book of Numbers, not the book of Leviticus. But we go back to the book of Numbers, chapter 3. It talks about the generations of Aaron and Moses in that day. In other words, when things were being set up, we are at the foot of Mount Sinai at this time. It says, in the day that Jehovah spake with Moses in Mount Sinai. And then we see that we have in verse 2 we're talking about Aaron, and we see that he had Nadab, his firstborn, and then Abihu, and then Eleazar and Ithamar. And it indicates here in verse 3 that they were appointed the priests, or anointed the priests, actually. It says that he consecrated to minister in the priest's office. Of course, we realize that Nadab and Abihu died. It says, as he says, before Jehovah. Do we read about that they died? Leviticus 10, verses 1 and 2, I think. Yeah. And why did they die? Right. As Mickey says, they used their big lighters instead of taking the fire off of the proper place, the coals of the altar, yeah. And when we look at it, though, we realize that I want to get back here to another chart that I've got. Let me see if I've got it. Yeah. This chart on the Levitical priesthood is one that is on a website that's actually fairly frequently used. It's from a place called Bible.ca. And so Steve Rudd put this thing together, and he's got a lot of stuff on his website as to how things went in history and such like as that. But as we see in what we were just looking at in the book of, wherever we were, Numbers, we see that it talks about Moses and Aaron and the people that were there. But we see that they are relatives of Levi. And so Levi was one of the sons of Jacob. I believe he was the third son of Jacob. Anyway, so he was the third one by the hated wife, Leah. So Levi was the third son of Jacob by Leah, and of course there's the other 12. And Levi then had three sons: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. When we get now down to the time of Moses and Aaron, we realize that they are of the tribe of Kohath. Kohath had sons: Amram, Hebron, Uziel, and Izhar. And these four sons, the lineage of Amram is where Moses and Aaron and Miriam came from. So we see, as we go through the Old Testament, that Amram is the father of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. So the brothers and sisters right here. And you can see here also that Aaron had four sons: Eleazar, Ithamar, Nadab, and Abihu, or in parentheses, because they didn't live very long. And so it says right here that he's got a little thing here that says that line ended. And that makes sense. It certainly would have. So would have in my cursor and give me notes all over the place. So when we look at this, though, we realize that the important thing for us to understand or to note is that the three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, were the ones that were given duties to do toward the tabernacle. So it was the Levites that were given the duties of things to do, but not all of them were given the same thing. So you can see that Steve has put notes in here, for example, what the Gershonites' duties were, what the Kohathite duties were, and what the Merarite duties were. And so we want to look at that a little bit, because I've always been confused a little bit, I guess, up until I started studying this a little bit, is when we look at the story of the Good Samaritan, right? So this guy was beat up and left by the side of the road. And who passed by? A priest went by, and then a Levite went by. I thought, well, what's the difference between a priest and a Levite? They're all from the tribe of Levi. And so nobody had ever explained that to me. I never looked it up. So, well, one's a priest, one's a Levite. Whatever. And the other one was a Samaritan, right? So we don't have to be concerned about him. But so I thought, well, we need to find out what this is all about. So when we look at it, and Steve, along with his chart here, has got an extensive article that, after I put it in WordPerfect and did it, it's like 14 pages long, that talks about the way that the Levites and such are set up. And so when we look at then the three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, we realize that the three of them were given different things to do when it came to the tabernacle and later on the temple. Now, one thing we need to understand is that though God told Moses and Aaron what duties these people were supposed to have, later on, the tribe of the Levites had so many people in it that there were just way too many to do all these things all the time, and especially when they were now in the Promised Land, there wasn't anything to move around. So there were things that needed to be done, but later on, we will see that David and Solomon actually sort of organized the way that the Levites were set up and made sure that things went the way they ought to. So this other chart that I had showed you that shows the courses of the priests, this was something that was more set up by David and Solomon than was set up by God directly. All right. So when we look, though, at the three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, we realize that the Gershonites, they camped here. This is just a sort of a graphic of the tabernacle. They camped here on the west side of the tabernacle. Now, the opening of the tabernacle was over here where Moses, Aaron, and the Aaronites were camped. And so the Gershonites were over there. Now, their duties were to move the tabernacle covers, the curtains, the screens, the cords, and they were to do that with ox carts. And if we look at Numbers, the fourth chapter, and verses 24 to 26, that's where exactly what he says. This is the service of the Gershonites. And so those are all the things that they're supposed to do. Take the curtains and the hangings and all that sort of stuff. Now, they had been given, as part of the things that that Moses and Aaron were commanded to give them, they've been given two ox carts and four oxen to haul all this stuff around. And so they were supposed to just take all this stuff and pack it up, and they were supposed to haul it around on the ox carts to the place that they were supposed to go. So, and then also in chapter 7, and in verses 7 and 8, it says here, and that's where it talks about it, it says, two wagons and four oxen he gave to the sons of Gershon according to their service. And you can see here that Merari, who we'll talk about in a minute, they got four wagons and eight oxen because they have more stuff to haul around. Okay, so they got all those things. Then later on, also, we see as far as the Gershonites go, the sons of Gershon, and so all those people. When the land was allotted, when Joshua and all the folks went into the land of Canaan, they realized that there were allotments of land. This tribe got that, this tribe got that, this tribe got that. But you remember also that the Levites were allocated cities. Now these are not the cities of refuge. These are cities which were allocated to the Levites. And so the Gershonites got 13 cities. They're located within the tribes of Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, the Manasseh that's in Bashan. So they got 13 cities. And you can find that in Joshua, the 21st chapter, in verse 6. Then later on, we see, or in addition then, after the Gershonites, I'll find the right one here yet. Okay, after the Gershonites, then we realize that we have the Kohathites. Now, we realize that Moses and Aaron are part of the Kohathites, but also they have relatives in Hebron, Uziel, and Izhar. Those are their, of course, their parents. But there are more people that belong to Kohath than just Amram, who is Moses and Aaron's dad. There's also Hebron, Uziel, and Izhar. So, whereas the lineage of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, or the lineage of Amram, is a special one, we realize that we still had three other sons in Kohath, of the Kohathites, that had to do things, that had things to do. And so, they camped on the south side of the tabernacle, so you can see here that the Kohathites camped over here, along with these tribes. You know, see the other tribes here, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin camped with the Gershonites. And then Reuben, Simeon, and Gad camped with the Kohathites on the south side of the tabernacle. Their duties were to carry holy items like the Ark of the Covenant, the lampstand, the altars, the utensils with poles and such like as that. I'm trying to find out where it was right here. There we are. But they got no carts. They were supposed to carry all these things on their shoulders. So if we look at Numbers, the 7th chapter, and verses 7 through 9, that's particularly verse 9. So we have been talking about the number of ox carts that the others got, Gershon and Merari. But we see unto the sons of Kohath, he didn't give any of these because they were to bear these things upon their shoulders. So it was up to the Kohathites then to take all these sacred items, and they were to carry them, and they were to carry them on their shoulders. And then they got, it turns out, 23 cities for the Kohathites in Ephraim, Dan, Manasseh, and Manasseh that was in Canaan. They got 23 Levitical cities. Now, these are divided up into the cities that Aaron and his folks got, and then all of the rest of the people got. So Aaron, the priest, and his follower, his descendants and family, they got 13 cities. And then the rest of the sons of Kohath received 10 cities. This is all by lot, and we can see this all in Joshua, the 21st chapter, where all these things are being allotted. And then finally, of the three sons of Levi, the Merarites, or the descendants of Merari, they camped on the north side of the tabernacle. One of these days, I'll just click on the right one first. But the Merarites, they camped over here. So they were the, where is he? They are, of course, of the descendants of Merari. They camped over here with Naphtali, Asher, and Dan, which are conveniently upside down. And it was their duty then, the Merarites, to move the tabernacle poles, the boards, the sockets, the pillars, and the bars. And if you look into the details of Numbers chapter 3 and 4 and such alike, you will find that not only there were they to bear it, but the boards and the things that they were supposed to bear, they were supposed to be assigned to a person by name. In other words, that's your board there, and that's your board there. They were to, and that's what the scripture says. It says that, I'm trying to remember exactly where it was, but it does say that they were, there it is. It's in Numbers, the fourth chapter, in verses 29 through 33. Numbers 4, 29 through 33. Up more, yeah. By name, right here. So in verse 32, it says that they would appoint all of these different instruments, the sockets and the pins and the cords and the instruments and all their service and the pillars and things like that, by name you shall appoint the instruments in charge of their burden. So the people were, you know, Richard, you got that board, that's the third one from the left. Okay, that's your board. So I got to take care of that one. They, these folks, the Merarites, they got 12 Levitical cities, located within the confines of Reuben, Gad, and Zebulun. So that takes care of, generally speaking, the three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, as to what they were supposed to do. So we realize that each of the sons was given a duty for their descendants to do regarding the tabernacle and what was to be done. But one of the descendants of Kohath, Amram, and his line were special. They were picked out to be the ones that were different than all the rest. So these folks here didn't have any of these duties, and they certainly didn't have any of these duties. Now, when it comes to, though, moving the ark and the holy furniture and stuff like that, that was the duty of the Kohathites. What was the duty of Aaron and his sons when things were going to be moved? No. As far as packing up goes, what were they supposed to do?
They were the ones that had to touch the holy things and get them ready on the cart. Because the Kohathites only could put the poles up.
Lift the poles up, right. So Aaron and his two sons and their descendants, their responsibility was to go into the Holy of Holies and cover the Ark of the Covenant with several coverings and to put the poles in it so that when the rest of the Kohathites came along, all they had to do was pick it up and carry it. And so they also had to cover the altar and the altar of incense and the...
lampstand.
And the what?
The lampstand.
Yeah. And so all of those things were inside the holy place, not the Holy of Holies, but inside the holy place. And then, of course, the Ark of the Covenant was inside the Holy of Holies. So they prepared all that stuff. And then the rest of the Kohathites, they picked them up on poles, or as it says, they carried them on their shoulders, as it were. So given that by the time they got down here, a couple of generations, they had like a gazillion of these people, I'm sure that there were plenty of people to hold those things up on the poles. All right. And then, of course, the fourth area, of course, is the Aaronites. And these are the people that had, you might say, special preeminence amongst all the others. Interestingly enough, Moses is called a priest. If we went to Psalms, the 99th chapter, in verse 6, we'd see there that Moses is called a priest. And, of course, we realize that most likely he would be. I mean, he was the brother of Aaron, and he was what you might say God's first high priest. But really, after he set up Aaron and his sons to do the things for the tabernacle, Moses was more the captain or administrator of the entire people of Israel, rather than carrying out, say, daily duties like Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar and their descendants did. So, excuse me. But Moses is called a priest, and he is of the proper lineage to be called a priest, of course. These Aaronites then, of course, camped on the east side of the tabernacle where the opening is, and so that they could get to them. They camped also with Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun on the east side of the tabernacle. Yes, ma'am.
And the lineage of Aaron, weren't they designated as high priests? There could be other Levites that were priests, and they did the sacrifices and stuff, but not the high priest.
The high priest only came from the lineage of Aaron, but you will notice that they all came from the lineage of Aaron. And so Zacharias could be called an Aaronite, as could Elizabeth. They were, if you were a priest, you were a descendant of Aaron. And it turns out later on, when the people got much more numerous, it turned out that sort of the leaders of the particular tribes or families, they were the ones that became the high priest. It doesn't appear that after Eleazar that there was any particular direction by God as to how are they to choose the high priest. Eleazar, of course, is mentioned in Scripture as being that he's going to be the high priest when Aaron dies. Ithamar, we really don't hear much about anymore. And Nadab and Abihu were out of the scene. So Eleazar was that. But so when it comes right down to it, when we look at the story of the Good Samaritan, and we see that a priest passed by on one side, we see a Levite pass by on another side. The priests were these people of the descendants of Aaron. And the Levites were the descendants of Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, the descendants of Kohath that were not descendants of Amram. Okay, so all of these people who were descendants of Hebron, Uziel, and Izhar, or were descendants of Merari or Gershon, these people were the Levites. They had, I don't want to call them more menial duties to do. They had other things to do other than go into the temple and offer sacrifices. So when we see that Zacharias had gone in during his course of Abijah to offer sacrifices or offer incense at the altar, he was permitted to do that only because he was a direct descendant of Aaron. All of the people that are here, that are in these courses, they're all direct descendants of Aaron. I guess technically any one of them could be a high priest. We realize that during the time that David and Solomon were around arranging these courses, that, as was mentioned, that the high priest appears to have been one that was the chief of one of the families, or the chief of all of them. I don't know whether there was how they came up with that, but there was that. But when we come down to Jesus' time, where did Annas and Caiaphas come from? They were, I think they were descendants of Aaron. Maybe I didn't check their lineage, but by whom were they appointed? The Romans. The Romans appointed both Caiaphas and Annas. And then later on, when we see Paul's tribe, and the high priest there is mentioned to be Ananias, he also was appointed by the Romans. So I don't know that they even took those people out of the proper lineage. And so it was more just a titular thing, I think, that you're the high priest of Israel, or whatever they call it, the high priest of the Jews, or whatever at that time. But they were appointed by the Romans. So their lineage, and I think that's one of the reasons that they had problems at that time as far as people arguing with one another, is that You know, if Ananias or Annas and Caiaphas were in around at the same time, you know, one might say, well, I'm more worthy of being a high priest than you because my lineage is more this way than it is over here, or you know. When we get into lesson 42, we'll have a discussion about the dynasty of the Herods. I was going to go into that today. It's a good thing I didn't because I never would have gotten there. But it turns out that the Herods were Idumeans, which came from the Edomites. And they were people that were forcibly converted to Judaism. So they were nominally Jews, but they're more like Samaritans than anything. Bruce, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, when you mentioned about King Herod.
Yeah.
King Herod the Great.
Yeah.
When he passed away, Matthew, it says that was right before Joseph's dream.
Oh, yeah, They went down to Egypt, and then when he passed away, they came back, right? And Jesus was still a little person at that time. Yeah. Okay, well, I hope this has been semi-quasi-helpful to you. At least when you look at the story of the Good Samaritan, you realize what the difference between a Levite and a priest is. At least I do. All right, thank you.